This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. I have two guests today. One of the cool things about having a radio show is that every now and again you get to introduce people that you thought knew one another but didn't and should. So two guests today, Dan Mintz, COO of Power Tech Corporation, and Ed Swallow, Vice President of Business Development for Civil at Northrop Grumman Information Systems. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, we're going to start with Ed, because Dan, everybody on Federal News Radio has probably heard you a couple of different shows. So, Ed, give us a little background, please.
Work for Northrop Grumman Information Systems, run business development for civil systems, pretty much health information technology, homeland security, the federal civil marketplace, state and local. On the international side, I have public safety and air traffic management. So that's kind of the portfolio. Background, 5 years active duty in the Air Force, 18 years reserves. Came out of the Air Force active duty, went to work for a small business. I got bought by a company, Logicon. Left there, became a chief technology officer for a small business, and did a roll up there, got bought by a publicly traded company, bought a couple of other companies, decided to go to work for a buyer instead of a seller, ended up at Northrop Grumman, been there 10 years.
There you go. So you've been doing this for a little while.
A little over 30 years of defense and intel experience uniquely qualifies me to go to work in the civil business.
There you go. I was going to say, in the intel side, we may have some friends in common there. Dan, fire away, bud.
So, by the way, Ed didn't mention the most important thing about him. He is a fellow Washington Capitals hockey fan.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go.
Go Caps.
Go Caps.
They're in the playoffs.
Thank goodness.
I didn't say that.
Oh, ye of little faith.
We'll hope that gets edited out. Anyway, the PowerTech Corporation, a small, disadvantaged women-owned business growing about 20% a year. About half the company right now is does service and help desk support. We're moving up to data center optimization and consolidation support. About a third of the company does software development, website development, things like that. And the rest, we do a little bit of cyber, IT governance advice to government agencies. For me, I've been around the D.C. I'm the most local Washington person you'll ever meet. Born in Washington, D.C., went to college in the Washington area, lived here all my life. Been in the IT technology field forever, rather than getting an honest job, and spent 3 years, three of the really luckiest years, I think, in my life, being the CIO at the U.S. Department of Transportation, and then came out of the government and ended up at PowerTech as the COO.
There you go. So when you're inside, in the lockup, as it were, at transportation, What was your criteria for meeting with vendors?
I tried as hard as possible to be as open as possible. Because I found on both sides of the fence, the more communication, the better. And so I was, I used to tell vendors. And so first of all, we tried to be open. I established regular meetings with all the agencies in the department to talk about procurement planning and things like that. I divided up vendors into three categories when I used to talk to vendor groups. People who we dealt with that were commodity focused, we did RFPs with, people who would help us optimize our performance. I had to meet with my direct reports. And I, in particular, were interested in people who would help me support my customers better, who understand what the role of the department was. But in general, I had a pretty much an open door.
Okay. Were you at Northrop when he was at, how long, you were just there like 6 years?
3 years,
ago.
3 years. I through noon on January 20th, 2009, I was paid for 4 hours that day.
There you go.
So Yes, I was at Northrop, but at the time I was part of the IT sector, and most of my work was actually on the defense side.
Okay.
So I never had a chance to call on Dan while he was there.
Or send any of your minions to do so.
No, some of my folks did do a little bit of work in that area. We do more in the FAA area.
Yes.
But at the time, we still had TASC as part of the company, so we were on the CETA side of the house, so we weren't really calling on... You know, many folks there, we were conflicted out from doing pretty much any system development work, but had a very strong presence down there. Now that TASC has been divested, we're back in the FAA game.
There you go. TASC's out on its own again and seems to be having a good time.
Having a very good time. Have a lot of very good friends there. That's actually where I entered into Northrop Grumman, was into TASC.
Okay.
Worked there for about 6 years. So.
A great entry point. If you haven't figured it out, we have a really big business in Northrop and a not-so-big business in PowerTech. So I want to talk about the contracting environment right now. It is once again in turmoil. We're looking at lower budgets. We're looking at maybe limited ways that at least the Senate wants the government to buy. What's this mean for large and small businesses? And we're going to get into also how Northrop, especially, and how Ed in his programs is dealing with and partnering with and teaming with and working with small business in general. So.
Well, the environment right now, it's kind of interesting. The pendulum swings. I have not figured out what the periodicity is yet, but the pendulum swings between let's bundle everything up, let's get a big system integrator in there, let them do all the integrating everything together, and then swings back in the other direction and basically says let's break it up into small different pieces, let the government be the system integrator and pull everything together. I think we're swinging back in that latter direction.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing programs like it was called Falcon, now IT Nova 2. They just announced it's going to come out in basically the 9 Gartner towers as individual components. So yeah, I think we're seeing it go in that direction. That does give small businesses a lot more opportunity, you know, to go after a couple of those pieces, expecting a small business to be able to govern a large, you know, $1 billion deal and be able to handle the financial situation that's needed just to pay the bills on something like that is unrealistic. But when you break it into the smaller pieces, it gives people different parts. So the big businesses do the thing the big businesses are good at, and the small businesses get an opportunity. So it's definitely swinging in that direction right now in a couple of areas.
Okay. Dan, is that what you're seeing?
Yes. The other thing, at least, is hitting us is the cost pressures are impacting a lot. For a number of our programs, we're seeing a movement in terms of evaluation from best value back to technically acceptable low cost, which is being forced on the programs from a budget point of view. But the program people are not necessarily comfortable with that because they're always looking for the organization that can support them best.
Right.
So you have this kind of budget pressure going on. We're finding that the government is looking now for ways of hitting really private industry standards, like in the services area, really reducing the amount of labor investment to support the government. So there's a real cultural change that we're going to go see over the next couple of years, I suspect.
Are they assuming robotics is going to take over here?
Automation in different ways. The problem is in the support area, people are most comfortable with support that is tied directly to them, but that's inefficient. It's better to have centralized support of some sort, but it's less friendly. You know, I talked about it like managing down the hall. It's much nicer to be able to yell at the person, you know, 2 doors down from you. So you have this cultural change where you're going to be having centralized call centers. You won't necessarily have this direct personal relationship. The number of people that'll come out will be smaller. And you have to do that because of the cost implications, but it's uncomfortable for people. So you have to figure out how do you have a trade-off between efficiency and still having personal touch.
Absolutely the situation. The one throat to choke syndrome is the norm in a lot of the business. When you're doing the help desk, the desktop, you know, the direct one-on-one connection, You have to be careful how much of that you automate. You know, people do want to have that call down the hall and make it happen. At the same time, the centralization really does provide a lot of benefit. While you're doing that, at the same time, automation in the form of tools can be very helpful. And to get to your earlier point, technically acceptable lowest cost has a dangerous spiral to it, and it rapidly devolves to lowest liar wins. And so defining what technically acceptable is becomes the art. And so helping people understand that, you know, defining what is technically acceptable is absolutely critical to getting the service that the customer is looking for. And whether that customer is a federal customer or a state or local customer or the couple of commercial customers we have, it's really helping them understand what the art of the possible is that helps to set the stage for technically acceptable. And that's the key to competing in this environment and to get out of that lowest liar wins death cycle that you can get into.
Yeah. One other thing I'd say is that the challenge you have is that the thought is if you move to a performance-based kind of approach that and let the provider optimize that way rather than specify everything, there's a possibility of saving money, which is possible. But the problem you have is that the performance characteristics are often independent of the actual mission. So that you might have number of calls or how much you close, or if you have any software development, you know, how many lines of code or things like that. But the difficulty is coming to enough agreement on what the actual result is supposed to be, mm-hmm. not the intermediate steps. So you might optimize the performance, but you don't necessarily optimize the result of the program. So you have the same problem that Ed mentioned, where the intent is one thing, but the result can easily be something different. But it's happening. I mean, the pressures, these budget pressures are going to be really dramatic.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after these messages.
Vacation time is right around the corner. Why worry about the safety of your home while you're away?
I had Ackerman Security install a system 2 years ago. Now, I leave for vacations with total peace of mind. I know I can trust an Ackerman Certified Monitoring Center. They don't use a third-party monitoring company like most companies, and it's only $18.95 a month.
Call today and get 2 free months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Here's Alan Hansen, Chief Intelligence Systems and Processing Division of the Army, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by EMC Isilon.
The issue. Yeah. Really now, right. We'll be able to visualize the data more like infographics, right, and help make sense of scale and data points in, right, ways that we have never thought of in the past. The other one is sort of a societal kind of impact I'll see is I think there will be winners and losers economically.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
And now here's Gary Newgard, Director of Federal Solutions for EMC Isilon, the leader in big data and scale-out storage.
EMC delivers a portfolio of game-changing technologies, transforming full motion video and ISR. EMC's edge to the national solution is a cost-efficient path to the cloud and the optimum solution for big data.
When your agency's expanding data requires effective storage, visit emc.com/isilon. That's emc.com/ISILON.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
To balance new cuts with new spending in the FY 2013 budget, federal agencies are achieving savings through emerging technologies. Largely led by chief technology officers, agencies are rewriting the rulebook on areas like shared services, commodity IT, cloud computing, and cybersecurity. Join AFSEA Bethesda April 10th at the Bethesda North Marriott as a panel of CTOs from federal agencies discusses federal IT transformation from the bottom up. Register today at afseabethesda.org/APRbreakfast.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests today are Dan Mintz, who is the CEO of PowerTech. And PowerTech, you can find at PowerTech Corporation, all one word, .com. And Ed Swallow, who's Vice President of Business Development for Civil at Northrop Grumman Information Systems. You can find him at very simply northropgrumman.com. Gentlemen, let's talk about the areas of technology that are going to be hot, i.e. funded, and types of vehicles coming down the pike to address these various issues. Who wants to start?
I'll go ahead. There are a couple of areas. You talk about things that are both interesting, are topical, and are also going to be funded. I think those things that are going to be funded have one thing in common, that is they're going to be funded because they will provide at some point a significant reduction in cost. I think the discussion going on about the federal budget deficit and getting it under control, I believe there is going to be a stomach to make some level of investment at the front end to bring it down at the back end. Area that we're heavily involved in is health analytics, specifically to help bring down Medicare, Medicaid fraud. There's clearly, any budget line item that has B's next to it is one that's ripe for identifying efficiencies. And so that's an area that I think is both going to be funded and is going to get a lot of attention, especially if it can self-fund itself, if it can generate more savings than it actually costs. You know, the more you can do that in the same fiscal year, the better off you are. Mm-hmm. Cybersecurity is one that's very hot. I don't know whether it's going to get as much funding. You know, every quarter, I've got to go put together pure play cyber, embedded cyber pipelines. The pure play cyber is not very large, and there are not many targets, and the targets that are there aren't very large. When you look at the embedded cyber, cyber is being embedded into just about everything it needs to be. So cyber expertise is something that's going to be critical. But as a separately funded line item, I don't see it happening to a great extent across the marketplace.
Regardless of the buzz.
The buzz is there, and it needs to be there because we have to start building it in as opposed to bolting it on. The concept of a pure play cyber deal where you're coming in and trying to fix the mistakes of others is a very, very difficult proposition. So cyber being built into every process, into every software solution, every network solution that goes out there is a much more important aspect to it.
You prefer that side to giving Band-Aids to bleeders?
Band-Aids to bleeders is not a good way to go. I'd rather keep the razor blades out of the hands of the kids.
There you go.
I guess on the cyber thing, the one challenge there is that the issue of bolting on or building in takes enormous cultural change in terms of how you approach software development and architecture and cross-organizational planning. I think that's something we'll talk about in the near-term future much more than we're going to see happen. I would also agree with the cost reduction is you're going to see a lot of old stuff be recompeted for cost reduction or rearranged for cost reduction. I suspect cloud computing, as buzzwordy as it is the real financial implications of it are still just beginning to be achieved. And the government is going to grapple with the fact that you have to do things a step at a time, where there's going to be a tendency to try to do the last step first. So you have to do things like virtualization by combining things, and then can you look at data center consolidation, which you need to do. The other area that and there's going to be a need for the government, both for people to implement that and also to act as advisors to the government as to how to do that, because we're talking about vast cultural change in terms of how to deal with the provisioning. The other area which may get built in is the general area of mobility. And I think that's going to be relevant because, first, it ties back to, in some cases, the cost savings. But the other lever you do have in the government is things that are very tightly coupled to the resulting mission. When it's often hard to do that, but when you do that, that's very powerful. There is going to be continuing movement to changing the way government interfaces to citizens and stakeholders, which is going to be more and more mobile. And that has political value. And as we all know in this town, things that have political value and get the appropriation committee members interested because it's visible to their constituents somehow gets funded. And
all right, will that continue after the election year?
Well, inevitably, people, though it doesn't seem like it sometimes, they actually do want to get reelected. So their interest in at least trying to appeal to voters will continue. And one of the things that is being talked about now in the public space, but I think will become louder over the next year or two, will be changing the way government interfaces to citizens. And the citizens are increasingly mobile and increasingly expecting interfacing all the time. And that's going to have impact in terms of some of the funding.
Yeah, to cloud, I absolutely agree with the fact that cloud is going to be a hot area. My first question is, what business outcome is the entity that's thinking about going to the cloud trying to accomplish? And what that really boils down to, it's not really about the infrastructure of the cloud. It's not really about the virtualization. It's really about how do you get more pieces of data into one place so you can do something with it. So fraud detection is clearly the number one area where if you can get enough data together, you can start seeing where fraud is occurring. But the other place, and a couple of states are actually taking the lead on this, is improving citizen services. So if I can take all of the citizen services that are available to a particular citizen. So let's say somebody comes in and they want to apply for food stamps. Well, if they're applying for food stamps, then they also should be looking at, well, are they Medicaid eligible? Do they have children that ought to be getting the SCHIP support? So what the states are doing through cloud computing initiatives is bringing all of those disparate systems together into a common data structure, and that's creating a one-stop place for somebody to come in and enroll once and basically get the services that the state is there to offer them. At the same time, it allows them to only enroll once, so that you don't have somebody enrolling in different places for different things that they may not be eligible for, or enrolling multiple times, and as a result, reducing fraud. So there's a business outcome where the citizens are getting what they wanted, right to the point that Dan made about making politicians very happy. When citizens get the services out of the government that they're expected, they're happy with the incumbents. And at the same time, there is a real dollar and cents business outcome for the state government, mm-hmm. because they're able to more efficiently manage the dollars that they're distributing. And so you can dollarize the outcome in that, even though it's a government entity.
Okay.
So I see things at the federal level that are headed in the same direction.
Let me ask a question about cloud for both of you to mull over. You talked about bolting on security rather than building in security. Does a cloud provide an opportunity to kind of start fresh in that arena and build in some security measures, or is it still going to be a bolt-on activity?
So I suspect if you ask this question of 10 people, you'll get at least 10 to 12 answers. My personal opinion is that organizations are only good at a small number of things. Most government agencies, in fact, most companies, security is not their number one capability. So one of the advantages of going to some of these commercial providers is that the chances are much higher they'll do a better job of providing security because it's integral to them being successful. There's a term related to that in terms of having public security. You know, is that you have to have a reputation of providing good security. So even though there's some complexity to it, I think cloud providers are more likely to provide secure environments than individual agencies. So I think it's a plus.
Yeah. Our former CTO, just retired recently, used to refer to cloud computing as swamp computing. He said they're both gray, they're both fuzzy, but in a swamp, something can bite you. And he was specifically talking about security in the cloud. Private, semi-private clouds, you can bolt on security. In a public cloud or semi-public cloud, bolting on is not the answer. It has to be built into the basic infrastructure and the basic core orchestration layer. So if your orchestration layer is not secure, you're not going to get there from here in a public cloud. So there are opportunities to try and protect data. And some of the conversations that have been had recently is, we're trying to build a deeper and deeper moat. And the bad guy's already inside the castle. So why are we building a moat? So why don't we try and protect the data as opposed to protect the perimeter? And so there's a lot of research being done on protecting the data. You still want to protect the perimeter against the simple and stupid. But for the sophisticated, you really have to protect your data and keep the data from being compromised. If that is successful, then the public cloud becomes much easier.
Yeah, okay. We're being polite. I think we're taking a little bit different perspective. I think systemically the issue that's going under, because there's these systemic issues that go underneath all this stuff. At the end of the day, what the internet is doing to stay competitive, and this is true of governments too, is they need to have a very free flow of information. We talked about information to the citizen. That at some level contradicts the notion of having security. You can't do both. Great. You're going to try and do both well enough, but one of them you're not going to do as well. And so the problem you have is the more you implement classical security, the less efficient you're going to be in terms of allowing the information flow. It's almost inevitable. Yeah. And I would contend that in the end, you have to be sharing.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, back after these messages.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I have this dream where I'm leading a group of people in developing groundbreaking solutions for environmental and energy issues. Every day, I'm helping to build this company from a startup into a major player. Before long, we're expanding into new markets, opening offices, getting media coverage. What am I saying? This is no dream. It's what I'm doing now, thanks to my MBA from Capital College.
The business world is driven by strong leaders. One of the best ways to raise your leadership skills to the highest level is through an MBA degree from Capital College. Our online program is focused on developing high-level leadership and management skills for both private and public sectors, with a thorough understanding of how to apply new technologies to solve real-world business problems.
My dream turned out even better in reality. Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
Our brains all look pretty much the same from the outside. To truly understand what makes each one different, a quest is on to reverse engineer our most complex organ. A unique personality is somehow programmed into your brain. Sebastian Sung, a computational neuroscientist at MIT, is trying to decipher the way that happens and how personal memories are made.
One very important hypothesis is that the information in your memories is somehow encoded in the connectome, that unique map of your brain's connections.
Sung says a connectome looks like an airline flight map, but
for your brain, it would have to be 100 billion cities and 10,000 flights emanating from every city.
Connecting those dots is a massive job, but Sung is engineering techniques to do it, both in his lab and on a website asking the public for help called iWire. That's eyewire.org. More at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Fred Whiteside of NIST on the Navigating the Private Cloud panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Dell.
NIST defines a private cloud as one that is owned and operated by a particular organization. I think if there is any ambiguity, I think it lies in what constitutes an organization.
Mm-hmm.
What is an organization? Is that an entire department? Is it a bureau or agency?
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Microsoft and Dell, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Today's federal agencies are being asked to do much more with less. With requirements to consolidate data centers, increase security, approve agility, and demonstrate mission-critical alignment, all while ensuring the cost-effectiveness of a virtualized infrastructure, the task can be daunting. Moving toward the private cloud could be the answer. And the best news is that you may already own products like Microsoft Windows Server, System Center, SQL Server, SharePoint, and Exchange, which can help you get your agency well on its way. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/transformgovIT.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Our brains all look pretty much the same from the outside. To truly understand what makes each one different, a quest is on to reverse engineer our most complex organ. A unique personality is somehow programmed into your brain. Sebastian Sung, a computational neuroscientist at MIT, is trying to decipher the way that happens and how personal memories are made.
One very important hypothesis is that the information in your memories is somehow encoded in the connectome, that unique map of your brain's connections.
Sung says a connectome looks like an airline flight map, but
for your brain, it would have to be 100 billion cities and 10,000 flights emanating from every city.
Connecting those dots is a massive job, but Sung is engineering techniques to do it, both in his lab and on a website asking the public for help called iWire. That's eyewire.org. More at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Dan Mintz, CEO of PowerTech Corporation, and Ed Swallow, Vice President of Business Development at Northrop Grumman Information Systems. Ed, pick up your thought there from the last segment, please.
Well, I think Dan and I are absolutely agreeing on this. My core comment is the only secure network is the network that has no users, which doesn't make it very useful. At any point beyond that, you're accepting some level of risk. And the more people that you're going to get involved in operating in an environment, and the more you're going to be bringing in people who you don't necessarily trust to behave the way you want them to, i.e. Mm-hmm. open to everyone, the more you really do have to focus on securing the data, and you have to focus on risk management. And you're always going to have some level of risk that's inherent in the internet. The openness of the internet was built into it to begin at the very beginning. That was a fundamental design principle. We shouldn't be surprised that that's what we have, because how it was designed.
The guy who designed it gave it away.
Yep.
I wouldn't. I'd have got at least $5 and lunch. I'm cheap, but available. we have a unique situation here as far as guests on my show goes. We've got a guy who was in the service, then in small business, now in according to Washington Technology, the second largest government contractor, next to whatever that other thing is. I forget their name.
The Brandel across the river.
Right. Martin Marietta. Whatever. And we have a guy who has been in government, been in large business, and now is in small business. So my question here is, I refer to this oftentimes when large companies partner subcontract team, whatever you want to call it, whatever the situation might be, I refer to it as spousal abuse in varying degrees. So. Starting with that minor premise, how do large companies partner subcontract? How do you find small companies to work with? And we'll start with that on this one, please.
Well, I can tell you from a lot of my career where I was selling to the big system integrators, I got a very unique perspective. And each one of the integrators has a different personality. I mean, it's not just the personality of the individual you're working with, but it's the personality of the corporation and the way they deal with small businesses. I happen to be working for a company that does a very, very good job. One of the reasons when I left a small business and I went to work for one of the bigs, I picked Northrop Grumman, was because I had always done well with them. They had always treated me well. When they gave me work share mm-hmm. or work scope, I got to keep that work scope. And so when I went to work for them, I realized that that's just part of the DNA of the corporation. We have, within civil systems, we have a unique situation. Most companies put their small business liaison within their supply chain manager, mm-hmm. Sometimes within procurement. We do that just like everybody else does, but I actually have a small business coordinator within my business development organization. His job is to be the internal account manager for Northrop Grumman for all those small businesses.
Is this an SBLO?
No, his job is much more than an SBLO. Okay. I have an SBLO supply chain.
Gotcha.
His job is to be an account manager for the small businesses that we have gone out, we've vetted, we've identified, and we've said these are the ones that we want to partner with. We have 13 mentor protege programs, and we've won awards for our mentor protege capabilities. That's just within my division.
Because I know you got some over.
We have some
in other, side of the river.
Yeah, there are actually about 32, 33 mentor proteges within all of Northrop Grumman Corporation. 13 of them are just within the Civil Systems Division. But that's just the mentor proteges. Those are the smaller businesses. We have long-running relationships where we share pipeline information with the smalls. And I have a fundamental message when I talk to small businesses. There's four things they need to bring me. And in rank order, in order for me to look at them as an effective partner. The very top is the killer app. You know, they have a technology or an application that is something that is going to make a value proposition difference to the customer that we're facing. Number two, if they don't have the killer app, then it's the killer relationship. It's the relationship with a customer that I don't have. It's a face to the customer. And I have no problem subbing to somebody when that's the case, you know. So we're one of the few smalls that will actually have bigs that'll sub to a small on a regular basis as a matter of strategy. The third one is a geographic presence that I don't have. You know, I may need support in a different geographic location, and I'm not necessarily interested in opening an office or something like that, so I look for a geographic. The fourth one is socioeconomic category, and how do they help me achieve my goals? Again, we've been very successful. We meet all of our goals on all of our contracts. We've won an award from the State Department the last 4 years running, and knock wood, we're coming up on a fifth one for being the outstanding large business contractor.
But the socio is number four.
Socio is number four. I'm looking for a killer app, killer relationship, or a geographic coverage, you know, before I get to that socioeconomic category.
Dan, since you've migrated to the small business scenario as your current employment, what's your experience here?
So first of all, Ed, I think, did a great job of summarizing it. And I would say, by the way, that when his number four, the socioeconomic, becomes number one, that's one of the reasons that no positive result occurs afterward. Because at the end of the day, and it's remarkable how many people ignore the fact that these relationships ultimately must be mutually value added. That energy and activity is overcomes the lack of value. But at the end, it always has to be value. The second thing is something that Ed touched upon, but I'd like to expand upon, and that is it also depends on the culture of the large company related to that. I joke sometimes that it's very rare that anyone is incented in a large company for giving away potential revenue to a subcontractor. You know, they don't get more compensation typically when they give away that revenue that otherwise would go inside the company. So when you have a company that, as Ed described it, where you actually have individuals who are incented and paid to maximize the relationship, or if the culture of the company is that they have a big emphasis on keeping the letter and spirit of a business agreement, and not all do, unless that exists, these kinds of relationships often stop at the win and don't continue to the implementation. And that's the big issue. People are all focused, and the energy is on how do you win the procurement, and you lose track of the fact that after you win something, there's still a value-added argument that's going on. So because of that, you have a lot of small businesses that become very disappointed that they don't get resulting revenue. And the reason is because they haven't thought through the fact that you need to have and work on this value-add relationship. And I would agree. I'd say the two big issues are what's your technology or could be app specialization that makes you complements the prime, and second, penetration, I think, that is presence at a particular organization, I think are the two predominant ways that you can keep that value add and generate revenue. If they don't exist, you're not going to get any money.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages.
Today is the day to make the switch to decide you're going to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. I checked my alarm monitoring bill, and wow, I made the switch to Ackerman with no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month. Now I save $25 a month. That's $300 a year.
Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive 2 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The Federal Employees Health Benefits Program is expanding members' access to experimental drugs. It's going to require insurers to cover participation in certain clinical trials next year. The Office of Personnel Management says those trials will include federally funded research into prevention, detection, and treatment of cancer and other life-threatening diseases. The federal program is getting a head start on legal mandates that kick in 2014.
Attention new federal employees. WEPA is currently offering up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis to those individuals within 180 days of their original federal hire date. No medical exam or physician's reports required. WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also offers premium refunds and a college scholarship program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, WAEPA.org.
What is the information technology strategy for the U.S. National Nuclear Security Administration? How is the NNSA modernizing its technology infrastructure and ensuring its IT investments align with its overall mission? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Bob Osborne, Chief Information Officer at the National Nuclear Security Administration, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every week here at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Jeremy Farber, president of PC Recycler. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about our firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Ed Swallow, who's the Vice President of Business Development for Civil Systems at Northrop Grumman Information Systems, and Dan Mintz, COO of PowerTech Corporation. You're in Maryland, you're in Virginia, so we got both sides of the river here, too. That's cool.
We don't even need a passport to visit.
There you go.
You sure? Have you seen the traffic going across the bridge? There's got to be a reason for it.
I was coming back yesterday from Springfield, one of my favorite trips living in Howard County. And when I was coming back, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the backup was from after Tyson's on the outer loop to 270. And I was waving at everybody when I drove by.
Yeah, I actually think there is a passport check as you go across that bridge. That's what's slowing everything down.
There was something, man. I don't know what, but I'm glad I wasn't going the other way. Let's continue this small guy, big guy kind of thing, because obviously, in at least most of your Northrop relationships, my spousal abuse syndrome doesn't seem to carry through, and I'm ecstatic to hear that, because now I'm going to introduce all my small business friends to you.
And but, I will then turn them over to my small business
I'll make sure they have a killer app or a killer relationship before they come your way.
Just as importantly, and to Dan's earlier comment, it's got to be an enduring value proposition. Just checking the box. The one that drives me crazy is we got good people. The capability briefing that comes in and has 15 pages that make them look like a big system integrator. And then I ask the question, okay, how many people do you have that do that? And the answer is 6. You know, the one that really got me was they came in and they said, well, we're really good at cybersecurity. You know, we have 8 people that are CISSP certified.
Wow.
And it's like we have 1,800. You know, the 8 isn't the right, you know, and I round to the nearest 100 when I count them. So, you know, 8 is not, you know, what's the enduring value proposition? If they've come up with a really good process in cybersecurity, if they've come up with a really good suite of tools, you know, if they've got 8 guys, but those guys are the best in the world and they can demonstrate why, now they've got a value proposition. Now, what are they doing to make that an enduring value proposition? So is there a reinvestment profile that they have that they're going to continue to expand that tool? If it is, I'm going to bring them in and it's going to be their job to keep that tool and to keep it going.
Okay.
That's when I partner with them.
Would an enduring value proposition be that skill applied to a particular agency with some sort of longer term relationship?
I have an example of one where not only was it with one agency, but the tool suite that the particular company brought in was applicable, and we brought them into existing contracts we had in a couple of other places. So we introduced them to a couple of other agencies, and we're looking at joint intellectual property, taking one of our tools and one of their tools and marrying them together.
Just building on something that Ed, we had talked together about, I mean, just as one example, building on this overall conversation, we've talked a lot about, if you want a soft skill, but one that may have long-term value, we've talked about how the government is facing all these cost reduction and has to move to usable, real performance base that actually is a value. A company that has shown demonstrably that they have the intellectual a methodology or an approach or experience level with real world experience that they helped government agencies do that transition and have credibility in the marketplace is a soft skill that has the potential of being translatable if it has structure to it that is understandable and could be sold in the future. But again, it has to be something by enduring value. It has to be something that ultimately some government agency feels that it's worthwhile investing in a contract.
And if they're willing to put that capability into the statement of work, we've now raised the bar on what is technically acceptable. Mm-hmm. And we've now made it a much more level playing field for people that are going into it. So if I've got a small business and they've got a capability, I want to get them in front of the customer. And so, you know, one of the key aspects of small businesses, you have the small business liaison officers and the small business offices within different administrations and
right.
within different departments. That's a great avenue to go in for a second way to go get in front of those customers and have a dialogue with them. So that's part of what we, especially with our mentor protégés, is we use them as an extension of our marketing organization and our business development organization.
Well, the OSDBU
that's where the real partnership comes in.
Yeah, the OSDBU annual OSDBU conference is coming up in a couple of weeks. It's going to be somewhere in Virginia again, I think. Yeah. And you know, all of the OSDBUs will be there. A lot of the SBLOs will be there, and I'll guarantee that 70% of the companies that show up will show up leading with their socioeconomic status and assume they're going to walk out with a contract.
Yeah, I used to joke, they said, if you were asked, what do? The answer is, what do you want? And I'll give a working example. You want one, in our case, again, I'll talk a soft skill methodology. On a number of our larger contracts, because we're moving into larger contracts, we've taken a discipline that comes out of the academic community under the title Voice of the Customer, and we've developed a structured approach to it that we use on our larger contracts. And we have, in fact, a person who is in the company that we've invested in an overhead structure to represent that. And when we respond to proposals, and when we actually do the implementation in terms of measuring how successful we are, we have a structured program in terms of of finding out what does the customer want, have we succeeded, and things like that, which help us give ratings. Mm. And that's the kind of thing, in addition to having a software app that we might have related to mobility or any other kind of thing, that we're using to differentiate ourselves as in terms of a structured approach to these kinds of things.
Gentlemen, thank you for coming in. We could take this on for hours and hours. But we're not gonna, because we're out of time. Greatly appreciate you coming in. My guests today have been Ed Swallow, VP of Business Development for Northrop Grumman's Information Systems Civil Division, and Dan Min, COO of PowerTech Corporation. This is not my day job. My day job, aside from consulting, is the co-director of the Government Market Master Program at Capital College in Laurel, Maryland. Our programs for sales, marketing, business development, and social media will begin in June. Look me up on LinkedIn, and I'll show you all about it. Thanks for listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.